You're listening to Project Oncology on ReachMD, and this episode is sponsored by Bristol-Myers Squibb. Here's your host, Dr. Charles Turk.
Welcome to Project Oncology on ReachMD. I'm Dr. Charles Turk, and joining me to discuss evidence-based strategies for managing relapsed or refractory mantle cell lymphoma after BTK inhibitor therapy is Dr. Michael Wong. He's a professor in the Department of Lymphoma and Myeloma and the Department of Stem Cell Transplantation at MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston, Texas. Dr. Wong, thanks for being here today.
It's my pleasure to join the audience and you on this program.
Well, we look forward to a great discussion. Why don't we start with some background, Dr. Wong? Would you tell us about the clinical implications of BTK inhibitor failure in mantle cell lymphoma and what the therapeutic landscape currently looks like for these patients?
Mantle cell lymphoma used to be the worst lymphoma to treat among all the lymphomas. But in the 2013, FDA approved a drug called ibrutinib. It is the first-generation covalent BTK inhibitor. The second one was the second-generation BTK covalent inhibitor called acalabrutinib, approved in the U.S. in 2017. Then there was another drug from China called zanubrutinib, also approved in 2019 for treatment of relapsed mantle cell lymphoma. And all of a sudden, we have three BTK inhibitors, and we treated many patients. We saved the patient's lives. We killed the tumors. However, those three agent targeted therapies are not curable. We also found that if the patient has the lymphoma that's resistant to prior BTK inhibitors, that patient doesn't live very long, about less than a year, especially in the aggressive cases. Then the next breakthrough was CAR T cell therapy. And nowadays, we are moving toward more immunotherapies, such as CAR T cells against novel targets, and also, amazingly, bispecific antibodies. So far tested, there's mosunetuzumab, there's CD20, CD3, and glofitamab, CD20, CD3, and epcoritamab, CD20, CD3, that used subcutaneously. That is the current status of mantle cell lymphoma.
Now, guideline-based strategies often suggest lenalidomide with or without anti-CD20 antibodies as a chemotherapy-free option. In your experience, what role do these immunomodulatory drug or IMID-based regimens play in the post-BTK inhibitor setting?
Lenalidomide is very different from chemotherapy, especially it is very different from the BTK inhibitors because it works as a cereblon binding agent, and it works by modulating the immune host. So it is mechanism of reaction is complete from BTK inhibitors. If you use a single agent, the effect is not that good. But if you use combination, it is especially effective. Even the BTK inhibitor does not work, lenalidomide plus rituximab could still put patient in remission.
So then, given all these options, Dr. Wong, how do you approach treatment selection and sequencing for patients who fail BTK inhibitor therapy? And are there any clinical or biologic factors that tip the scale towards IMID-based therapy versus CAR T-cell therapy?
The IMID-based therapy, it has the strengths because lenalidomide is an oral drug and rituximab is given by a peripheral catheter. So it's a very easy regimen to give. However, lenalidomide has found to cause cytopenias, especially neutropenia and thrombocytopenia. Furthermore, in randomized clinical trial with myeloma, it can also cause secondary malignancies. Therefore, in lymphoma, we use about 6 to 8 cycles. We rarely use extended beyond a year. So with this information, if the patient has used BTK inhibitors, I can use lenalidomide plus rituximab with or without venetoclax. Venetoclax is a BCL2 inhibitor agent to overcome resistance. We can use that. I can also use CAR T to overcome BTK inhibitors. So the BTK inhibitor resistance are divided into two categories. One category is that although they relapse after the BTK, but the tumor is very small, there are no high risk features. This way, we use R2, it should be very, very effective. And if we want to put a venetoclax, the second oral agent, and to it, trial already proved that it is also effective. But a BTK inhibitor can cause, after the BTK resistant relapse with a high-risk disease, P53 mutation, blastoid or pleomorphic morphology variant, and the key IC7 proliferation index over 50, those are very aggressive tumors. You do not use targeted agents or three drug combinations. You use CAR T cell therapy because those high risk patients, you use targeted combinations, it won't last very long, and it makes the resistance even worse. So CAR T cell therapy are used to combat the high risk features or high tumor volumes after BTK inhibitor. And the targeted combination is used in low risk tumor relapse after BTK with low tumor burden and low risk factors.
For those just tuning in, you're listening to Project Oncology on ReachMD. I'm Dr. Charles Turk, and I'm speaking with Dr. Michael Wong about ways of managing relapsed or refractory mantle cell lymphoma after BTK inhibitor therapy. Now, Dr. Wong, if we zero in on CAR T cell therapy for just a moment, we know that timely referral can be crucial, but unfortunately, it's not always straightforward. So with that being said, what are some best practices for preparing eligible patients for cellular therapy, especially in terms of workup and bridging?
First of all, any mantle cell lymphoma patient deserve a academic visit. That visit should be as early as possible. Also, it is impossible to prevent doctors from treating the mantle cell lymphoma in the first line or the second line. So as long as after second line therapy, the patient is not doing well, refer to an academic center as soon as possible to consider CAR T cell therapy. I think after first or second line will be the best timing. If you refer earlier, that's okay too. Nowadays, the referral pattern are no longer just from the community doctors. The patient itself refer all the time, even more than the referred one. That is good. But oftentimes, the patient itself refer too late. But even it's too late, it's still better than nothing. Right. So I think to send the CAR T cell as patient as early as possible, but at least about the second line failures, you need to refer them. All the studies indicate the pre-infusion tumor volume affect the side effects, the degree of side effect, and affect the efficacy, the response rate. So if you think about it, you have a 10 centimeter tumor and you don't do nothing about it, you're giving them people the CAR T cell. The CAR T cell is probably only can cause a partial remission because it cannot penetrate in the center of the tumor mass. And it probably causes a lot of side effects of CRS or ICANS. Let's see if you actually were able to use hypercytoxin, dexamethasone, and rituximab plus radiation to reduce the tumor to 4 centimeters CAR T cell, then you eradicate that tumor to zero. So that would be a great strategy. So treatment bridging therapy is vital for the success and the safety of the patient.
Now, as with any treatment approach, immune-based therapies have some important safety considerations. And fortunately, the ASTCT provides grading guidance for adverse events that you had mentioned before, like CRS and ICANS. And the NCCN toxicity protocols can assist with steroid dosing, anti-IL-6 strategies, and even decisions around ICU escalations. So how can these frameworks help clinicians manage risk, and how can teams best implement them?
There are many, many rules, but the fundamental rule is basically when to use the steroids, when to use tocilizumab, when do you use highest dose steroid, when do you escalate to even higher dose of the steroids. I think in our institution, there are so much exposure, and you can hardly forget the rules. But in mantle cell lymphoma, oftentimes you need a time to accumulate the experience. And after you manage some cases that become second nature.
Well, we've certainly covered a lot of ground today, but if we look ahead before we close, Dr. Wong, how do you see the roles of IMiD-based therapy, bispecific antibodies, and CAR T therapy evolving for relapsed or refractory mantle cell lymphoma? And what's still needed to further optimize access and outcome?
A lot of people say, Dr. Wong, everybody says mantle cell lymphoma is not curable. What do you think? I think that mantle cell lymphoma is no longer not curable. We are in the process of curing some mantle cell lymphoma patients. So what's the definition of cure? My personal bias, after I consulted many people literature, in my opinion, if the patient has achieved a complete remission for 15 years without interruption, those patients are cured. So in my clinic, I have many, many patients who has CRs for more than 15 years, and I send them to survival clinic. I regard them to be cured. My feeling is that we are in the process of curing many mantle cell lymphoma patients. In the future, even with the bispecific antibodies, that's not enough because patients still relapse. We're going to work in with a new fast CAR Ts, new novel CAR Ts with different targets, bispecific antibodies with combinations, different targets. And we also need to work on the biological basic translational research.
Well, with those forward-looking comments in mind, I want to thank my guest, Dr. Michael Wong, for joining me to share these key strategies for managing relapsed or refractory mantle cell lymphoma after BTK inhibitor therapy. Dr. Wong, it was great having you on the program.
Thank you.
This episode of Project Oncology was sponsored by Bristol-Myers Squibb. To access this and other episodes in our series, visit Project Oncology on ReachMD.com, where you can be part of the knowledge. Thanks for listening.